I know we have a number of guests today among us. I want to introduce and maybe embarrass one of them in particular. The Reverend Tom Wintle joins us from the Weston congregation today, where he is. Tom is on sabbatical, one of those amazing ministerial things that I hear happens at some point down the road. But Weston has been a good friend to this congregation for many, many years, so I'm glad to welcome Tom among us this morning. Today is the last Sunday of, what month is it, March? And our final investigation into the theme of forgiveness, at least for this time around. We were reminded earlier during Amanda's offering of how useful apologies are. The simple and sometimes not so simple I'm sorries for everything from ruining a roof to being too full of spaghetti. One person says, I'm sorry, and hopefully there is a pardon that follows as we forgive each other and forgive ourselves. We heard a different kind of apology this morning from Ralph Waldo Emerson, who was not saying, I'm sorry and want your forgiveness, so much as, this is who I am. An apology, as it were, in defense of himself and his life's choices. Think me not unkind or rude that I walk alone, that I go to the God of the Glen to fetch his word. Chide me not for the idle flowers that I brought. Emerson is explaining himself, defending his choices against the pressures of the day, perhaps, and to be and do otherwise, to value something of his own choosing. And it made me wonder if life itself has a defense to offer us, that we might forgive in some way its disappointments, its seeming unfairness, its inequities, its challenges, why some struggle and others appear not to, why some have capacities that others lack, why random appears to be the nature of things, why some are born into oppressed communities and others born into privilege. Why? If life were an individual, what would its apology be? And how might we forgive its impact on our lives? It begged the idea in my imagination of a place more perfect. And as it happens, a few of us several weeks ago began re-examining Genesis. In case you're wondering, we do it Thursday mornings at 8 o'clock, and we've only made it through the flood, so you haven't missed that much. You could join us. The writers of Genesis, the first book of the Hebrew Scriptures, and there were likely many writers over a long period of time of both oral tradition and written traditions, the writers painted an early picture of just such an exquisite and more perfect place to live. We remember, and I invite you to picture in your minds, first the sky, and then light, two great lights, actually, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. And then there were waters with swarms of living creatures and birds flying above the earth and every living creature that moves, cattle and creeping things and wild animals of the earth of every kind. It was good. In my mind, I imagined a place like the Amazon forests with the sounds of waterfalls and exotic birds and chimpanzees. I've never been to the Amazon, so I have no idea if that's what it's like. It's what I imagine. And then humankind, male and female, and a garden with its own river to water it, every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food, except that one, the tree of knowledge. Don't eat from that one. It feels that in this perfect place, it should always be summer. That may be, for me, a little bit of the Hawaiian influence, but I have a hard time imagining Adam and Eve in the Arnold Arboretum in the middle of winter. Or even now, when it's officially spring, it's still a bit chilly. Eden is green and lush and warm, but not too warm, and sunny, but just sunny enough. The grass is soft, the food is plentiful. Likely no books. I don't imagine books there. No movies. But then, you know, no war, no disagreements that we're aware of. No Democrats or Republicans, that might be nice. No guilt, because they haven't done anything to feel guilty about yet. Everything is gentle and easy and provided for and perfect. Maybe not especially interesting, not very exciting, but peaceful. So we were imagining this Eden in our small group conversation, and one person said, "Wow, that actually sounds kind of boring, perfect." I thought at the time, I guess that might have had something to do with whether Adam and Eve were attracted to each other. It's a form of entertainment. But once that had been stated, there might have been only another perfect piece of fruit. Adam, look, nothing bruised or misshapen, not even without genetic modification. Boring might be a good description of perfect. On the other hand, it does sound pretty good in some ways, like the kind of place you might want to go on vacation for a while, and you wouldn't have to pack much. But at some point in the garden of perfection, what might you miss? I decided I would miss the weeds. I'm not the best gardener in the world, but there is something very satisfying about pulling weeds. If the garden were perfect, what would I have to pull? In a perfect world, what is required of me, of each of us, of our enormous penchant for creativity, of response to the environment if it's all done already? What is left for us? What need is there of any particular gift, of my gift or your gift? God, how about a new piece of statuary on the South 40? No, I already took care of that. It's perfect. Okay, well, how about a water feature? Adam thought that might be nice. No, it's perfect, just the way it is. A new shed down by that pretty brook? No. Everything's taken care of. I do the gardening. I make sure everything is fed. You run along and frolic. Nothing to add our creative juices to. So what else? What else might we miss in a perfect world besides weeding? I was thinking I might miss a bit of competition. I'm not a very winning-oriented person. For the most part, my goal at swim practice is first to get there and second to make it through. But there is something to be said for the encouragement to push oneself a bit to improve or strengthen a skill. I think I would miss that. What occurred to me was that mostly I think what I would miss would be learning. In a perfect world where one is not challenged to be anything other than what they are, I would miss the opportunities for learning and knowing and becoming more. Remember that the forbidden fruit was from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. There was nothing to learn. Adam and Eve tasted it and became aware of all kinds of things, not least their nakedness. But one imagines their imperfections, their limitations, their yearnings, their disappointments, their frustrations. We can imagine it would be a bit of time before they became aware of the other side of that coin, their capabilities, their resourcefulness, their resilience. Without the first, one is not aware of the second. Without adversity, there is little to overcome. Remember the phrase, necessity is the mother of invention. Certainly there is some adversity we could do without, but how do we know what will move us the most, what will transform us or help us to grow and become before it happens? So am I suggesting that we should be happy with such an imperfect world as this? Is it either or? To which one might reply, do we have a choice? Clearly no, and we could be resigned. But I'm not speaking this morning of being resigned to what is. Emerson was not offering the apology in service to resignation, but to understanding. I'm speaking today in defense of life just as it is, encouraging our capacities to understand and allow for it, to forgive what we might consider its deficiencies and find peace with them, even appreciation for them, because we know in our heart of hearts that perfect would not serve us well. In perfect, there is nowhere to grow. There is nothing more to become. Doesn't that sound a little bit like its own kind of hell? We don't get to pick and choose, of course, what our challenges will be. And there are challenges we likely would not choose to learn from. Things that make life harder, either physically or emotionally or psychologically. Illness comes to mind. Or loss, pretty much any kind of loss, not least death. But even before those lessons, there are countless challenges that we could curse life for. Being different in tribes where sameness is celebrated, for example. Life confronts us with so much confusion all by itself in its random distributions of unique. Can we forgive it the frailties and the losses, the hurt and the sadness? Can we forgive life the unknowns in deference to the task of becoming? Here we are in this mysterious, amazing life where we know we will mess up, we will fall short and offend. We will do too little, we will do too much. We will get caught up in what's wrong and forget to attend to all that is right. And here is life saying in its own defense, and with apologies to Mr. Emerson, think me not a cold teacher. I am the garden filled with flaw. I am the way will open preacher, every opportunity for awe. Curse me not for what is absent. What you think you ought to know, everything I am is meant to be a path on which to grow. Forgive what I am not by way of what you'd like your life to be. Recognize my gift and say that as I am, so shall I be. Life offers us this amazing opportunity to learn, to grow in all its imperfections. It invites us to become more aware, more alive, more awake. Let us not get caught in our quest for its perfection, for being just right, for having all we want, for needing others to be the perfect accompaniment. In our wanting, we would miss the amazing gift that is life, just as it is. Amen.